This recording of the Panama City Linux User Group meeting number 58 was made on June 19, 2008 while on vacation. The slide presentation to accompany the audio can be found at pclog.info and by following the link in the show notes.
All right, you want to start going through the links?
Sure.
This one I put in, some of this is old from at least 2 weeks ago, but this was a little shot of the second version of the OLPC. And this is a slow machine we're running on here. But it was supposed to have like a touchscreen on both sides. Or they say we're talking about it, I guess, multi-touch. And so like the keyboard, you know, it's like they could do international keyboard a lot easier because it's not even a hardware keyboard.
Wow.
Just put the image of it up there.
And going on.
Yeah. I know. I don't even understand how they do that stuff, man.
Yeah.
If you look at the specs on the old one, I mean, maybe it was slow and a little hard to use, but God, it was crazy what they got out of that little bit of power. Anyway, so let's close that tab. This is the game, and you've already seen that, but the Penny Arcade game. And they have it for Linux, Mac, PC,
Windows, and on Xbox Live.
Okay,
Arcade.
Penny Arcade?
Yeah, Penny Arcade's a couple guys, if you're not familiar with it, a couple guys who basically write comics and do web commentary on video game industry. Pretty funny. They have a very big following. They did something that most people who are critics of the industry won't do. They actually made a game with a company about their characters and stuff like that. And, you know, that's got mixed reviews, but they released it through there. They had kind of a homebrew game site called Greenhouse that they're starting up, and this was the first game released on Greenhouse, and they released it for every platform. So I thought it was very cool that, they definitely put it on the Xbox Arcade and PC, Mac, Linux. It looks pretty good. I played the demo. It looks pretty good. I just don't have the time for games anymore. So
yeah, that's pretty. That's like a pretty cool screen.
Then take Windows Vista and 8 gigs of RAM to...
You know, I didn't try Windows Vista. I don't know what the hardware requirements were for that.
Change this thing, go to the back. Something else. Go back and start my page up.
Is that a cat that was so small? I still don't
know. Put her head at the same time.
This thing's just pretty small.
Yeah, her butt has gotten bigger and her head stayed the same.
Good, great. I was learning about BIOS peep codes.
Oh, you gonna do the one in the microwave?
Yeah.
What's the microwave doing? No video card?
No keyboard attached.
That's funny, man. Here to be. Are
you two keyboards?
There's a jillion of them.
Yeah.
This one is, I didn't really know this. It seems like I heard it, but I never messed with it. But Bash has a VI command editing mode for people who like VI.
Really?
Yeah, so like you do this set minus O, VI, and you can go in command and insert mode. And I try to do this all the time by accident.
Long dash? On the command line?
Yeah. I mean, don't you find yourself doing insert and go
like
back.
I'm always hitting L or something. Wait, no.
So it actually has that, but I just never used it. Anyway, figure at least people. And you can, like, yank arguments and put them in another place and all that kind of stuff. Change where. So all the stuff that you try to do on accident actually does work. This one, I think I saw this one today. They were talking about how AMD is doing the shared source, or a lot of the source they reuse on their Linux, their Windows, their Solaris, and all the driver base is trying to make it as much common code as possible. So they're getting support out for the cards as quickly as they can. That's just an article on that. I thought that was kind of cool.
Is that the official Ruby?
I don't know, so it's pretty hot.
You got an API.
I don't think Python can hold, you know.
The... Oh, no. That's not Ruby the language, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's got an API.
Oh, okay.
API collar on, or whatever that thing is.
They'd be pretty smart if they used the logo like that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if you could say Python and have a girl like that. That wouldn't match very well, I don't think.
Maybe Boa.
Yeah, something like that. This one, everybody mentioned it last week, but I didn't have a set of slides. So what do we do here again? You can do like a S for search.
You can do like V for video, I think. Video for space.
Whoops. I did actually. Wireless keyboard. Okay.
Wow. Computer graphics. Wow.
Okay. S space. You do that little star. B, C. No, we're not first. Oh yeah, that's right. PCLoad.org. Because I tried to do that with some kindergarten readiness thing. Because I wanted to work. Anyway, just a little Google Shell thing in there. There's all kind of stuff you can do, right?
Yeah, type build, you know, give you the, yeah, you do all kind of crap. It's cool. Fun for them.
Yeah.
You search what you can do, really.
Kind of interesting. Alright, so. This one is you.
I don't know.
I think it is.
No, I don't think that was me.
You didn't send that to me?
That's the AMD thing, isn't it? AMD makes Evolutionary Leap. That was one of your previous links. If I did send that to you, I don't remember.
I might have pasted the wrong link with the wrong thing. Let me see what it says. Software vendor list testing benchmark. I thought you sent me something about testing.
I'm blanking.
Yeah, because it was with this same email. I think I might have pasted the wrong.
I think that's the right page. I saw that link in Google Reader today. I mean,
okay.
And I think it was to that web page, but they had the wrong story there.
Okay. I know this one was the Notebook Remix. Thing you sent me last time.
Yeah.
It's not. When I do a new tab, why is it not going to it?
Did you get an S11 or something?
Are you in full screen? Well, when I did a new tab,
it
wasn't
going. It's just not going through. It's going in the background?
Yeah, I guess I need to.
You hold down shift.
Okay.
Shift and click.
Alright, so this one's you. Let me do the thing while you're talking.
Oh, okay. This was just kind of interesting. A little article I looked at with the Notebook Remix. It was kind of vaguely mentioned in an interview a while back with Mark Shuttleworth, and it's basically it's supposed to be an OEM kind of stripped down version of Ubuntu for like maybe atom-based small portable smaller than the sub-notebook thing. I can't think of the right term.
Like the Asus machine?
Yeah, I kind of like that. It's a small, you know, on-off web surf kind of machine or whatever. So it looked pretty cool. The idea was kind of neat, and I guess there were certain things about it that I thought would be really fun to play with, and I had mentioned to Dwayne that reading through this thing with the questions and answers, it had a lot of good things to say. The one disappointing thing about it was that they seemed to make it sort of clear that they intended to be OEM only, so they weren't going to just have like, you know, just don't go to Ubuntu and see the ISO for installing this on a device or something like that. It was more supposed to be when you buy a device, it's on there. And they're in a good place to do that. I can understand why that's their angle, because right now those devices they're not prevalent out there. So instead of it being you buy one with Windows whatever on it and you put Ubuntu on it, now it's equally viable to just buy one with Ubuntu one to begin with. And that's the angle they're trying to push, because they're trying to change the mental approach of, instead of Linux being a displacement OS, it being an actual OEM. Type thing, which they've shown through, you know, their deals with Dell, selling Dell's with Ubuntu or pre-installed, that kind of thing. So It looks cool. Looks like it'd be pretty neat to play with, but it doesn't look like it's going to be something that's easily just go download it and boot it up in a virtual machine or something like that. But it kind of reads like you can do it, but you kind of got to know what you're doing. They're not going to support it. They're not going to, you know, that kind of thing. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, you should read that. It's a pretty good question and answer.
This one is Mark.
Yeah. Intrusion detection. Open source. There's a couple of accessible good choices for intrusion. Intrusion detection on your system if you're interested in doing that kind of thing. That's really what it talks about.
I'm interested.
So, actually, yeah. I know we were talking about it in the lab a couple weeks ago. And I came across that article about the same time that was being talked about, so I decided to send it out.
This one is YouTube.
Yeah, this was a little bit more some explanation about maybe some recommendations about partitioning your system if you're installing from scratch, and what the maybe give you some insight into what like the VAR and those different kind of mount points or what's underneath them. So depending on what kind of system you're installing for, some recommendation on some sizes and things like that.
I like that.
Yeah, that's so great.
I know there's several different articles we've talked about in the past about it, but this was just another one.
I like it. Look at how he makes a partition just MP3.
Yeah.
So, I don't take the time to explain that one.
And why you're, and you know, like if you're running a web server, you know, what partitions you need to separate out, things like that. I thought that'd be useful.
Was this you, Chris? Yeah, this was you. The one chip that wasn't x86 that would run the Quake 3 full like all the alias and all the stuff I'm talking about.
I think so.
When you see it, maybe the ARM 11 CPU.
Oh yeah, that was for again like small devices. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? It plays sense. HD content. I mean, it's a CPU and graphics all bundled together.
HDMI output. Yeah, like Quake 3 at handheld resolution, full animation.
Yeah.
Anisotropic filtering, 40 frames per second. Wow.
and it's for like a smartphone or a handheld kind of device.
That's crazy.
1080p decoding, 720p encoding, I think.
On your Android, Google phone, you can play Quake 3.
That chip right there?
Exactly. That's the price. An ARM processor and their graphics.
They say it showered GPU it sort of. Long.
It did, I think.
And I'm guessing this chip comes in like
scroll
devices.
Scroll up.
Like a few
8.1 MIPS.
Maybe. That's the top of the article.
So it has an integrated ARM 11 core processor.
Yeah.
So what is it?
See, which is low power, small die size.
I was thinking they had two.
I think that's what's in these N810s. I know it's an ARM processor. I don't know if it's an ARM 11 or not.
Okay.
2 watts. There it is.
100 milliwatts.
25 hours of video playback.
Wow.
That's crazy.
30 hours of audio playback.
Yeah, 1080p at 24 frames per second.
Have you guys used this feature on the new Firefox, the full page zoom? Seeing if they have that. You know how Opera always has everything for, or most everything. They do it now. It does images, zoom images too.
Control plus, control plus, control minus.
Yeah.
Is it keypad plus?
That's control.
Yeah, keypad plus.
Keypad plus.
Because I did control and shift and the whole thing. Of course, the images kind of get a little crappy as well, not too big, but that's the full page, which I thought was kind of cool. I always thought it was a good feature. This is a really slow.
Control thing. Zero will reset.
Oh, there we go. Sweet.
Yeah, I like that one I used on.
There's a, I thought about you today. I saw it on the add-ons. There's a, what do you call it, speed dial add-on for Firefox.
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
Firefox
I'm
3.
I'm switching. I downloaded it, but I haven't switched yet.
And then Firebug works at the beta version of Firebug.
Works, what does that mean, speed dial?
Speed dial has this thing where basically your home page was a list of sort of your favorite apps.
Right.
Unnailed. That's an awkward feature, right?
Oh, yeah.
I saw that too, yeah.
Kind of.
Okay. Well, it's like when you open a new tab without, like if you just open a blank new tab, it would have like 9 options that, of pre-program that you had chosen, and then you get like number 3, and it would go to a web page that you already had programmed.
And it's an image, is a preview of whatever's on that site.
That used to only be an offer. Now he's saying it's in the new Firefox.
There's an add-on.
Add-on.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely do that.
I think. Did you send me this one, Chris, or did someone else?
Yes. Yeah.
I think I read that one too. It might have been me as well.
So somebody knows.
Basically, Acer's looking at shipping with some version of Linux. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they.
Yeah, I don't think they specified, but basically, Acer's looking at making some laptops that ship with Linux pre-installed as well. So, okay. So now you're looking at not only the Dells. And a few other kind of niche machines, but there's a lot of Acers out there that you can buy, like Walmart and stuff like that, that maybe potentially in the near future.
The more the better. This one is Tom.
Say again? I said I sent this last month.
Upper right corner.
How much are they paying you out of this, man?
There we go.
I'm going to retire. Well, I think this one speaks for itself. That they were talking about how long the OS has been up without rebooting. And
really?
That it defaults to safe mode whenever there's a problem. And they're real happy with being able to default to safe mode. It also said a lot about the guys who write code for them. And that... they do, like you see in the bottom paragraph, 20 to 30 sequences, 50 lines of code. But I'm curious how much of it's new stuff. You know, it's like probably some of it's move this arm this way and point the antenna that away. But the other neat thing about it was, to me, was how long the OS was up without any failures, which reminded me of a story that Jake told. This is this networking guy in our group, and he was talking about Cisco equipment, which is Unix based, right? Cisco stuff, and I thought it might be a neat Guinness World Book of Records category, you know, like the Firefox thing we're just talking about was, you know, they didn't want to reboot a Cisco box because it had been up for 4 years. And so they didn't want to do any maintenance. You know, the new patches came to, no, we don't want it. Because they thought it was neat how long it was up, you know. So I thought, well, I wonder if there is a Guinness World Book of Records.
There's a story that I've heard several times about some Unix machine running at some school, and it had some process that had been hung or something, was sitting there going, and it had kept, like, from years and years and years and years, and it looked like that. What year, but like a lot longer than 4 years.
Wow.
Like the 80s or 70s.
Something like that.
So some students like, let's reboot it and fix it. And the old professor walks out, no, don't touch it.
I just heard the story. I don't know anything more about it.
I guess they don't want to be caught around.
I bet you can Google that. Yeah. Talk to your biggest uptime. I bet you'll find all kinds of stuff.
Let's do it. Why not? it shouldn't go anyway, right? Just because I can't see it go. Oh, man. Thing that's
low,
or am I not doing
that? So, does the Firefox that came with Hardy, is that beta?
That was a beta, yeah. It was Firefox 3 Beta 5. And during the... I'm curious about this, too, because during the download party, I got a system update notification, and I updated Firefox 3.
Almost 12 years.
Yeah, see.
Wow.
There you go.
12 years?
That's what I'm talking about. Remember what kind of UPS he's got on that thing? Isn't that power clips?
That looks a little suspicious, doesn't it?
I've read this page before. I think at the bottom it says something about...
37,000.
Yeah, that's suspicious.
Did you see the Jeopardy thing, the Jeopardy tournament with the college kid? And at the end, the guy risked 1337. That was funny. And he read it out, he's like, 1337,
yeah, I was curious about the Firefox thing, because during the download, record-setting time for Firefox 3,
you wonder,
I got the update, and did the update, and installed Firefox 3, and I wonder if that counts. You know what I'm saying? Because it was coming through the Ubuntu repository, so I don't know.
I bet it did.
They had instructions or a note
there that said only manual downloads from the site or something.
Yeah. Well, I downloaded it too, just to count it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I did. I went and downloaded it afterwards just to make sure it counted. But
hey, you got it before we go on. All those little Debbie's need to be gone out of here. So, if you don't eat them now, stick them in the fire. The kids, whatever. So, okay,
oh, that's cool.
They got to be gone.
Put a cup on your desk.
There you go.
I'm not getting rid of you. Right there when you walk in the morning, you sneak a couple of those gym bags.
What the? Yeah, exactly. That's not what I mean there. Okay, so I guess that was the last link. No podcast links. I just wanted to mention, one of the podcasts I was listening to, I think it might have been Twit or Security Now or something. One of the guys on there was talking about how the EFF kind of saved him when he had somebody coming basically to the FBI was coming to sequester records from his website. And basically, as soon as he got the letter, he said that the letter told him that he couldn't inform anybody at his company about it, couldn't talk to his lawyers about it. It was against the law for him to talk to anybody like that about it. So somehow...
How is that true?
I don't know. He said it sounded ridiculous to him, and there was no... So I think... I don't know. However, he got in touch with these people, and they said... They were like, well, we don't want to know anything about it because then it puts them under the same thing as him. And so anyway, he had a story about it. But anyway, it sounded very interesting, and that the EFF kind of saved him on that because it would have taken him out pretty good if it wouldn't have been for them. So I figured I would mention it. And if you go to their website, they talk about all the cases they've done and all, and it's everything like peer-to-peer, file sharing, and requests for information from web admins and ISPs.
They have a podcast now, too.
Oh, they do? The EFF? Okay. So there you go. You might listen to that, too. And there's the link to the website. So, a donation or a t-shirt or whatever. But you might look at their website and see. I thought about getting at least a t-shirt.
Are the t-shirts cool looking?
I don't know. I
does it matter?
Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, you got a cool t-shirt, though, right?
Yeah.
Hey, there's some more bowls over there, Chris, if you want to put some of those chips in the bowl.
Yeah, I was just going to dump it
in. You can dump them on. That's fine. You can dump them on.
Mix the fiery habanero with the other ones.
Like, I don't want to do it.
You guys scared?
I'm scared. But that's all right.
Really? I'll put them on the bottom.
Have you ever had those?
I have. And they're hot as can be.
Yeah, they're about to
come on. Go ahead. Not
they're really hot?
Do it. It'll make it a good game. Sometimes they're unbearably hot. Depends on the pack.
I think in the middle of this discussion, we ought to say Dave should come more often because this is like very lively love.
Yeah, I read an article about somebody getting for the government, or they were trying to sue somebody doing file sharing. Mentioned the EFL, helping them defend themselves.
I think they're doing like good work, man. About what the, I looked at it, the website.
Let's see the T-shirt.
Okay, let's
put it up. Yeah, it's cool looking.
Yeah,
this guy in order was he 10?
We're gonna institute the Gilmore T-shirt rating system.
Yeah,
we're
gonna
hotcases. Spine, Shark, FCA, Travel Screen. I don't know. I mean, there's lots of information here.
See, right there, we need to tell them they need to put their T-shirt
donate.
Sale right
at the top there.
Oh, there's a logo.
Yeah, like I said, the logo's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
There you go.
There it is. Ooh, wow.
That's a good shirt.
I like the middle one. And I like the hat.
They're only $1,000.
Oh, man.
Defender.
You're a student, right?
65 looks like your lowest.
6 months subscription.
Is that U.S.? Organization? Is that contaminated by the euro?
I don't know.
Right.
The exchange rate? That's why it costs $100.
Just think the donation would be more if it was something other than American dollars.
Yeah, thank goodness it's American dollars.
Right, that's $1,000. Look at it, that's
the 20. Right.
So you get to get a T-shirt and a hat, you have to do 500.
No, 100. T-shirt, hat, or anonymous.
No, it says T-shirt, hat, or T-shirt and hat combo is 500.
What is anonymous?
Anonymous serving software package up there.
Cannot get over.
I guess so. Maybe they just give you torque.
Torque.
Yeah, torque. Yeah, out of
well, the FBI is coming after you. $500 earlier than.
Yeah, for real.
I'll donate right now.
That's like Jason Whitaker's thing with the CETO.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's a lot of money. And then later on, he's like, well, that's a lot less than $600. You can pull me back one time.
Yeah, that hat's nice because everybody would be like, yeah. What does that mean?
It's X.
It's you.
It's X.
There you go. All right. So this is kind of a obvious thing for probably people who program and anybody maybe who's even done Bash, but I figured I'd mention it because I used it the other day. But basically just a way to have kind of error handling thing with in a Bash script using the OR. So like for an OR, you evaluate your condition. You know, if this is true or that is true, then it's true. This is true or that is false. You know, one of them is true, so you got a true or false or true. True and false or false is false. So looking at this thing, if well, as an efficiency in most programming language in Bash, if the first thing it comes to is true, it won't even evaluate the second thing because all that has to be true is one of them. So it won't even evaluate the second thing. Well, you can use that to your advantage. So in Bash, if I do something like this, like this is my command I want to execute, Etsy Dwayne, just an LS of it, and that file's not there, so it'll actually evaluate the false. Yeah, your conditions can be a statement, like a command. So I run wget or grep or something, and it returns back this value, which will evaluate the true or false. So I can actually make the left hand side condition be a command, and the right hand side condition be a command. So if this command that I put on this side returns back a success, then it won't even run the right hand. As you see, it only one thing has to be true. But if it's false, it'll check the other side to see if it's true. So you'd use that as to your advantage by saying, I'm going to put this command here, and I'm going to say or, and then I'm going to put my failure command here. So if this thing returns true and succeeds, this never gets executed. But if it fails, this gets executed. And so I wanted a cheap way, basically on one of my things I have, it's the little box that sits on the projector. And so I wanted to run mPlayer and have it go to a URL or a file and start playing it. Well, I wanted to have a really easy way to say, well, if MPlayer failed to play this thing, I'm going to pop up some error. And because there's no keyboard or anything attached to it, I'm using this XOSD on-screen display stuff. You know how when you do the volume and it puts little bars up there overlaid onto your screen? That's how they do it with that X on-screen display library. So I wanted to be able to run this command, which in my case it was MPlayer, or echo something and pipe it to this OSD cat, which puts it on the screen. So basically, you know, run the LS. If it fails, this will come out. If it succeeds, then nothing comes out. And now the reason why I put this to greater than dev null, it's redirecting standard error to dev null so that if the command fails, I don't get any output on the command line. All I get is this thing popped up to OSD cat. And I don't think I have that installed on this machine, but we can install it real quick and see.
Do I remember I told you I went to recently to that Geeks training?
Yeah.
Well, I thought, I'm pretty sure that it probably is, the language is is a little different. It's Laris 8 is pretty much what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
But that tool, dev null, uh-huh, does the same thing with Solaris.
Yeah, it's a common Unix thing.
So okay. So it's not really that far off then.
Some things aren't. That'll be definitely the same.
Yeah. That pretty much kind of got me to realize that they both have some type of correlation with one another.
Yeah.
And,
This XOSD bin package is where you get that OSD cat. I'll install anything. I'm not sure it's going to work, but it should. So, like, if I do, and I can't be Root to do it because Root doesn't own the display. If I do something like my name, it's going to be super tiny, but I don't want to go through the whole thing of changing the font. But you'll get the point. So pipe it to OSD cat, do minus position, middle, and alignment, center. And see tiny in the middle, how it has that up there, and it's super tiny. If you change the font, it looks fine, and you can make it blown up big. But so, I go back here, and I do like ls/etc/host. And I say to greater than dev. Actually, we'll leave that off for now. I say or. So now, ls/etc/host is going to succeed. It's going to return. Actually, we can show that too. I'm probably skipping too much stuff here. So I do ls/etc/host. It sends me back the thing. And now if I do echo $?, that is the return value from the last command. And you'll see it's a zero, which means it succeeded. If I do ls/etc/Dwayne, it gives me, it pukes me back some error junk, and if I do echo $ that, you see it gives me a non-zero number, which means it failed. So now if I do something like where it gave me error message before, it gave it to me on standard error instead of standard output. It just so happens because we're at the terminal, they're both the same. So if I do this, I'll say send everything that you would normally send to standard error just to dev null. It just comes back with nothing. So now if I go ahead and stretch that on out and do an OR with OSD cat echo error, type that to OSD cat minus P middle stay center. So now when I run it, it's going to fail. It won't give me any output on the command line, but it'll pop up with the error on the middle of the screen there. And by default, it stays up for 5 seconds. You can change that. And now if I do one that succeeds, post, it just gives me back the thing in the evaluation on the right-hand side. So it's just an easy way to get like really cheap error handling. I mean, from just been on your bash screen. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but it's still something that's kind of handy, I thought. Okay, this was you, Tom.
Oh, well, we talked about DVD rip before, and I went to this page, which is on the link, and they come out with some neat little how-tos, but what I really learned was you have to, sometimes if the thing is grayed out, that's why I said I did a brilliant Google search, DVD rip transcode button, grayed out. And then I got this answer, and it said,
"It's inductive reasoning."
Right, it worked. Yeah, it worked. And so then I learned that you have to sometimes either press cancel, and the other thing I tried was restarting DVD. You save the project, then you restart DVD rip, and then the transcode button is not grayed out. And the reason it was important to me, if you look back in our lug slides, you'd see how I did a lot of different work with transcode and FFmpeg and playing around with those, but I didn't need to. If I just restarted or hit cancel or restarted DVD rip, it would have worked fine. I wouldn't have learned so much, but that was it.
Don't let
And the Google results actually refer to it as mashing the red X.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mash the link. Oh.
Sorry. Up to DVD rip.
That's this guy. Yeah, that's redneck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mash everything, but I don't mash my links. I can sort of click.
Yeah, I press the mouse button. Yeah.
That's funny.
Mash the links.
Okay, you mash it.
So, that place?
Yeah, so this guy, he come on, he talked to the other thing, he was playing with the new KDE, like the Ubuntu. And by the way, I learned a little difference between Kubuntu and Ubuntu. When you put in USB keys in GNOME,
yeah,
they automatically, you know how they'll automatically mount?
Yeah.
KDE doesn't do that. And we could show, but if I brought my stuff in, KDE won't. If you do fdisk-l on slash /dev/dev/db, right, it won't show up anything. If you do that, yeah, so it won't show up anything.
On KDE.
Right, on KDE.
If this minus L won't show anything in KDE.
Right. It's kind of weird that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still there. I was able to mount, you know, mount slash dev SDB1 to disk once I made the directory, but it wouldn't show up. And it wouldn't show up under a df command either.
Really?
So
that means it wouldn't mount.
No, I mean, it didn't mount and it didn't even show it up so where you knew it was there other than intuitively,
right,
to mount it.
Yeah, because I think I run Fluxbox and I purposely didn't start the, I think it's the GNOME volume manager, so
uh-huh,
it mounts that stuff automatically for you, because I don't like that happening myself.
You don't like it's the volume manager that mounts,
yeah,
it? Dwayne,
it took me a second to figure that out, because I had volume on the brain. I was, because I'm using Fluxbox, I was trying to,
right,
come up with some kind of panel app other than,
right,
K-Mixer, I think, to control the volume. And I was thinking, is that it? But no, it wasn't. Huh. That just controls the mounting of removable devices.
I think that's interesting, too, because you could see why you wouldn't like that. But then if you got used to it happening and understanding,
yeah,
that it would happen, the only reason I like to... and we went back in our old Lux because we went through a bunch of remastering stuff and remastering with Nopix, and I've fallen back to Ubuntu only because I'm not so good at the remastering, and new drivers for my cell phone as modem has come up with a new version of Ubuntu, so I'm tolerating these things that happen that you're not used to. Like what you're talking about, the automatic mounting.
Yes, I like Conker, and I don't like when I stick in a USB drive having to safely remove it from two different places. I feel like that's what I'd have to do, because
right,
Conker wouldn't mount it, but GNOME would mount it.
So can't you just put no auto in your F stack?
Yeah, you can, I think you can do that.
Will that do the same thing?
I think it might.
Mm-hmm. We can look and see.
A lot of times there will be man pages for the actual
files. That's what I do in mine. I guess if you don't, if you have a bunch of keys.
Not with the auto file system options.
Well, that would mean that you have to have an entry.
You'd have to have an entry for everything.
Yeah. So if you don't want to do that, you can give the volume in or turn it off. Whatever.
Or just not run the volume manager is what I don't. That's what I do.
How do you keep it from known from running the volume manager?
Well, I don't run the volume manager. I run plug box.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Another thing,
when you stop a service, you know, I do the update RC.
That's right. Okay.
Minus F.
Okay.
Another thing I don't like about that is if you put two or three drives in, especially if they're partitioned different ways,
right.
Then you're all the way up to disk 7.
Yeah.
You know, in the drives that are in the directories that they make.
Right.
All right. Did you do a new tab on this?
No. I just clicked the link.
Mashed it.
You mashed it. I mashed the link.
All right. And this is you again, Tom.
Oh, it is?
Tom, you've been busy.
Oh, well, shit. Okay. Well, this feeds into yesterday, or not yesterday, last 2 weeks ago. After we decided that the step was wrong, and you could look at the procedure, and maybe we should just look at the procedure real quick.
This is a USB drive we
Yeah, right. Okay. And we decided that the procedure was out of order. I was late for poker because I decided I had to try this because I spent so much time trying to make it work, and it didn't work.
It
and
sounds like you have been doing quality.
Yeah.
Changing the procedure.
Oh.
Did I even have it in here?
No. The procedure link. It has the procedure. The one in the last...
What was the procedure? Because I wasn't here.
That was...
Can you give me a brief
Penn
summary?
Linux.
Yeah.
Penn Linux Kubuntu.
What's Penn Linux?
Penn Drive Linux, I think?
Yeah, Penn Drive Linux.
What's that for?
Was it here?
No, it was the... I put that link in the slide that we were on.
Yeah,
boot
up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Into Linux. Penn Drive Linux.
Right. Yeah, yeah, mash procedure.
Oh, I'm
mash
sorry,
procedure.
Man. I'm sorry. Thanks.
Or you could press it.
You have to just smack me on the side of the head in the direction you want me to go.
Tom, what was it? Was it Casper we were trying to figure out?
Yeah, well, so, oh, what's wrong with this?
I can't find that page. Can we just go to the main site?
Yeah, you can just go to the main site. It should still be on the front page.
It's going to a space. I don't know if it was the space.
All right, so scroll down to Kubuntu Persistent. See that? Right there. USB,
no,
one,
right.
One down.
Right.
One down. There. Mash that one.
Mash
it.
Determine the right one.
All right. There's the procedure. And remember what we decided? If you scroll down further, and we decided that step 14, right there, see where you do the syslinux command?
Yeah.
When you do number 12, right, it mounts the drive.
Right.
Because you're in Ubuntu or some Linux that's mounting it.
Right.
So you put the USB in and then it mounts it. It doesn't have you unmount it before you run syslinux. And so what we decided last week was that syslinux running on the mounted drive would make this step not work.
Or so you need possibility.
Well, all right, that's what we decided was a possibility.
So you need to unmount.
So I did that and it didn't work. It
didn't work.
And I was crushed. So now you can go back to
the slide.
Yeah, the slide.
Unmash.
And then, that's a
backmash.
Dwayne told me so that you fixed it. So, but anyway, another Google search shows a Windows fix procedure. So there's, if you wanted to do this in Windows, you could get the thing to work. But I refuse. I won't use the Windows procedure.
That's right.
So, but there it is. If you wanted to make it work with Windows, you could.
Oh, delete the file name from the root directory right away. It's the RDXE. Del tree, C:\.
Try that on our clients.
Yeah.
So okay, that was, I just included that, and so that's how I ended it up. And then I ended up saying, if you figure this out, let me know, or Dwayne. And then, so Dwayne said, Ryan figured it out.
Yeah, I need to write it up. It was a bit lengthy, believe it or not. For me, there were, the easy fix, I'll tell you, is there's a thing with, like, SysLinux used to be, and don't quote me on this, but this is kind of the gist I got from the reading I did, where SysLinux used to write to the master boot record, always fine and dandy. Something changed that to support something to where now it didn't really do that. It really just wrote to a specific block on that, you know, like one of the first blocks in the partition, and it wrote a SysLinux dot whatever file, and then you also had to have a SysLinux.cfg that it used. But it never actually made the, it never actually touches the master boot record, so it doesn't actually make the drive bootable. So I found another guy who, in his thing, he was having problems with it, and he said he could never get it to work using just SysLinux because it was never touching the master boot record. And that the easy fix for him was he installed Lilo and used Lilo to prepare the master boot record for boot.
Oh. So,
yay. That was one aspect of the issues I had with it. So once I did that, boom, it tried to boot instantly. I got the menu to come up, the kind of the Ubuntu menu. There were two other problems I had. One was the initrd that we downloaded off that site.
Yep.
I had downloaded the KDE 4 remix, or whatever they called it, the Ubuntu KDE 4 something. There's Ubuntu 8.04, and then there's another one where they have put KDE 4 in it and released it about the same time. Well, the initrd is for off of pin drive Linux, is for just the regular 8.04 with KDE, whatever version was made without the KDE 4. And I was mixed matching versions, so that was a problem I had. But in doing some reading, I figured out what they were doing to recreate the initrd to make it be persistent. And so that's what I need to write up, because it was a little bit lengthy. But
oh, okay.
with those instructions, you should be able to, at least with any of the anything that's similar to Ubuntu, you should be able to make a persistent bootable USB drive out of it, because they're just making a few changes to some init scripts. And I actually changed, like they had in the instructions, if you'll remember, they had two partitions on the drive. One was for the system stuff that you dump the ISO onto, and the other one was supposed to hold, like, system persistence, so if you change settings or whatever.
Right.
Well, I mean, you can actually have more persistent folders than that if you want, so if you wanted to, you could actually, yeah, probably add users. I didn't do this, but you could probably add users, update software, and do everything you want.
Right.
With the extra space. And I didn't use the same names they did, and I learned where in the init scripts things had to be changed so that it knew how to, so that the initrd knew how to mount the other partitions to use for persistence and that kind of thing. So I'll write that up. And I'll send you a link to it. And
yeah,
I'll send Dwayne a link to it so you can post it in the slides. But it's kind of lengthy as far as the stuff that was involved. I mean, you could do it in 5 minutes, but, like, I wanted to know why. You know, what did this really change, and why is this an issue?
Yeah.
And so it actually took a little bit of reading to do. But I got to work. I did it with Ubuntu 8, regular Ubuntu. Just played with it. So I've done it with several. And I've actually got a little USB drive now with a persistent Ubuntu 8.04, yeah.
Will it save packages? Like, if you updated
it? Yeah, you know, I haven't done it, but I actually did the, hey, check for latest, check for newer packages, and it found them. It says that I should do an update. I didn't do it because, at the time, I was like, well, I don't want to have to redo this if it breaks something. So I didn't try it. But that's the next thing on the list, is just boot it up, let it do an update, and see if, hey, you know, everything's updated. Because that would be really cool. Because, you know, these 2-gig thumb drives are cheap.
Yeah,
actually, there's an 8-gig. For $30 on the Kinesis today.
Yeah, I've seen the 2-gig ones for like a 4-pack for, you know, $50. So,
right, in
so as far as reading and writing to it a lot, and wearing it out, who cares? They're cheap now, you know. So you could you know, you probably wouldn't wear one out in the time the next distribution
right.
came out that you wanted to use. So you just toss that one, you know,
right.
Get whatever you know, preference files, you know, over to your new one, and just toss the key. So.
So I looked at the VirtualBox install procedure, thinking like if you could do this and you, but you have to reboot to make the install work for VirtualBox in Ubuntu. There's a reboot step. So The reason I wanted to know that was if I could save a VM on the 8 gig drive and I couldn't get the persistent to work with the script, if I could get VirtualBox to load, then I could have a VM saved and it would work. But since you have to have the reboot without the persistent feature, forget
it. You can't do it, right? I did the other day just to see if it would work. I was kind of skeptical that it would, but I took a USB regular hard drive, and I took the internal hard drive out of that laptop I had, and I installed Ubuntu on that USB drive while it was plugged in.
Uh-huh.
And it came back up fine, no problem. I took the USB drive, plugged it into another machine, which is the same hardware. It worked fine.
So you did an install?
A regular install, right?
Well, why didn't that work in a key? Because I tried that in a key.
I don't know.
Spirits.
I was skeptical that
I had to mention the spirits on this thing. And that goes back to those links, no matter what you try and do to discount the spirits.
Anyway, it worked for me, so
I'm going to try that too. Many spirits.
That's true. It's a party, not a regular level.
Alright. Okay, so this thing is using Image Magic to make like stencils for painting on things.
Oh,
and
that's
so
brilliant.
So basically, let's see what I'm saying here. This page right here, this guy tells you a lot of information about getting. Basically, you're gonna want some text and some image, possibly an image on an image you create. With this Image Magic, we use the Convert program, or that's what I'm using. I'm sure you probably could use other things. But he goes through and tells you how to put simple labels and then change the fonts and put this, all these different colors. But if we're going to do a stencil, we probably want something pretty simple. But I mean, this is a pretty long page. As you can see, the scroll bar is still way up there, so he's got tons of how to do all kinds of things. But anyway, the link is there. So if you want to look for some reference, I mean, that's straight off the Image Magic website under /usage. But it's just a good, there's so much under there, I just figured I'd put a link to that one page. It is good for doing this. The other thing is, once you start doing it, you're probably going to want some fonts. This web page, publicity page, has a bunch of them. 1001 fonts has a bunch of them. And if you want to see, I bet I don't even have Image Magic installed on this thing. That magic, and it's with a CK. If I'm not mistaken, oh, wait, the old screen is talking about the thing. I think it's like that. Yeah, I just installed this one yesterday, so let's let it chug for a minute.
It won't take that long.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
it's
going to
take 2 minutes.
Ice age.
Exactly.
It takes
the
like 2 minutes.
Trickle out the window and
this
get
would
it back and come
work.
Back with it.
Yeah. That's something good 2 days, too.
But I'll be back in.
Who's your ISP?
Knowledge.
That's pretty good.
So if you want to see which fonts are already available, you can do this. This is the command we're using as part of the Image Magic package. And you can say minus list type. Now, I read, because I think this page says minus list font, but that is for a certain newer version of Image Magic. So if type doesn't work, try font. Doesn't work, you have tight. One of them won't work, shouldn't be. But it'll list the ones that are available already, and then you can add more. And there's documentation on where to put them and that kind of thing. I'm not sure. I never added any myself. 64%. Okay, so we'll just keep talking. The first thing I was going to do is make a simple one, just something in the middle of the page. So I do convert, give it a canvas size, 320 by 240. And now this thing is,
So much money.
I really want to talk to you.
That's your mom.
Some booty call.
Bring back a little bit.
That's his mom.
Mom, okay, I'll call you back. I'll look at you, mom. Can I call you back?
Okay, so you give it the size of your image. This right here, it took me a while, and the best thing I can find is just from examples. I couldn't find it in the man page, but this is like some key thing to say. This is a blank canvas, basically, and you can give it a color, you know, wide of, like, you might even be able to give it a X or something like that for color. But I don't know. Anyway, you can get by with this, because if we're doing stencils, pretty much you want white, black, that kind of thing, because you've been cutting it out. You can give it the font. You can give it the point size here, which is the font size and points. And then I give it this minus draw, and I start giving it this string from there to there of things I wanted to do. So I wanted to put text at the X 20, Y 140. So over 20, down 140. I wanted to write the word hello stencil, and I have that in single quotes. And then this is my output file, test.gif. And so what that gives you is this thing. It's just a little thumbnail. Because it's on a white background. It's just, the image is really only right here, but it's on a white background, so it just blends in with the rest.
So Control-A.
Control-A?
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
So that puts that up there for us. I'll just explain what those are. Okay. So that was a simple example. And so now we'll put a little bit of something different. So I say give it 1,000 by 250, white background, that font, and I'm making it bold so I get the chunkier letter. Point size 155. I say draw. And the first thing I do is draw an image. And I'm going to say draw it over everything on there. So, like, if you had text already there, this thing would be over the top of the text you can put on there or whatever. So I say draw the image. And I have four numbers for it. 770 is over X coordinates. So you see it's 1,000 wide. I put it over 770 pixels. Zero is at the top. And I tell it be 200 by 250, so it'll stretch and kind of skew the image to fit what you want. And then there's the image there, tuckstencil.png. And then I just start right in with the next command, text 10175 pclog.info, and then give it the output name, pclog.info.gif. And so it just jams out there. So you can see, you could actually make a web service or something that generated an image. You know,
for you.
Uh-huh. So that puts this thing out. Control A. So there you go. That's the full size of that image.
So is this the
part of that text is?
No, actually the image has the little.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, the image is actually screwed up. I just got it off of Google Images.
So is this the answer to your riddle?
No, not quite. It is. I mean, they're not much of a.
This is cool.
Okay, so this one. So I wanted to show you that you can rotate text with it. So this one, I say 800 by 200, point size 175, draw. And so now the first thing I do is I draw the image. I should take it off the full screen. That's all my problem. So I draw the image over 600 over 10 down. 175 by 200, you can see it there. And the Tuck's original. And then I say rotate, and it's almost like you have this drawing mechanism. And so it's like you can imagine I just rotated my drawing thing 180 degrees. And now I'm going to put text down, and I'm going to say, and it gets really screwy. You're going to play around with the coordinates, and I may be doing something wrong, but this is the only way I could get it to work. So you start doing backwards coordinates and all, and it is really jacked up. I mean, this works, but you got to play around with it. You got to find yourself doing minus 40, minus 20, minus 30, or plus 10, and it'll be all over the place. But you can play around with it till you start figuring it out. So I rotate it 180 degrees, so that makes that upside down. So I put the lug upside down, and now I left it at 180 degrees out. So I had to rotate it 180 degrees back, and then put the text, life. Put it out the lug like that, yeah.
And so you end up with that. So you can do all kind of crazy stuff. There's just so much stuff you can do with image magic. It's ridiculous. All from the command line. And maybe not everybody wants to draw stuff on the command line, but it can be useful sometimes if you had a script where you wanted to change this banner all the time or something like that.
That's cool.
So that was pretty much that.
It'd be an easy way to make an animated GIF too.
You can. Image Magic does all animation and stuff like that too. So, what I did is I took and I printed it out on. I just have it in this folder because it would stay. So I printed it out on paper first. And
cool.
Like that. And then you kind of want to print one out on paper and figure out, because it's kind of tricky to figure out what you're going to cut out, because you can't cut out everything and there's got to be something left for the stencil. So I'd say print it out on paper first and kind of figure out what you're doing. And then I took and printed it out on a transparency and then cut that one out. And then you can, it depends on if you want to reuse it. If you're going to make a lot of them, you want a transparency because then the paint will soak into it. If you're going to do one, you could actually print it out like this, and you can spray glue the back of it and stick it on whatever, and then it'll hold all those little pieces down so you get the real sharp edges and stuff. And the shirt is right over there.
I was going to say, can I buy a shirt?
Yeah. So I did. Mine looks really crappy because that's the first time I've ever done it, but I did it with this thing, and I didn't even hold it down. All I did was just lay this thing on the t-shirt and spray paint on even with a brush. So you can spray it, it'd be better and all that stuff.
So now Tom can open a t-shirt shop and make his own cool t-shirt.
Yeah, there you go. So I have these. Oh, I bought this, this little...
That's awesome. That's good looking too, though. I like that.
We should get tats.
Yeah. So this is a t-shirt paint, fabric paint, and it just says to wash the shirts first. Put cardboard between the, like, if you're gonna paint the front side, stick some cardboard between it so it doesn't soak through into the other side of the shirt. Apply 1 to 2 coats. Dry flat for 4 hours, and then after the 4 hours, you hold a iron about a half inch above it, and it says until paint appears textured, avoid over steaming, and then it says it can be washed after 72 hours, and it should last for quite a few washes. The girl that I bought this at that Joanne Fabrics thing, and the girl there told me that her kids did it and that she's washed it 25 times and still in there. So.
Did you run that transparency through your inkjet? Or?
Yeah, I did it upstairs. Really? The NMC operator printed that.
Are you serious?
Yep. Yeah. And they have a whole pack of transparencies up there. Actually, they have a whole big old keg of packs of transparencies up there.
Well, would you use a penknife or a little X-Acto?
Yeah, you get it at Walmart for a couple bucks or whatever.
That is awesome.
So, and I, you know, you can do, they have this stuff in spray, yeah. They have foam. Actually, they say the foam is best. I did a brush, which probably the foam would work a lot better. But anyway, so.
That is cool.
I have, this is another transparency. If anybody wants to cut that out, there's some printouts. Also, this image here is that exact image from the slide before, the previous slide.
You should do one just like that, man.
Yeah, you should do one.
Well, it's
like
there, man. You can do it.
That would
it's there.
Put it on
all you have to do.
That'd be pretty cool.
Put it on
the hat.
Let's see.
Here you go. You want to check this out?
Yeah. This image is the actual image I printed out. I mean, that is that one.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, if you want to do one, you can just take that image and print it out.
That's cool.
So actually, I got t-shirts. They didn't have all black, so I got extra large and large t-shirts. Y'all can do.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I got paint. If you want to take some paint home, and so you can make your own. Let's see. I don't know which one.
We should have a t-shirt party. Just make sure.
This is
make our shirts. Just make
these are extra large and these are large. Y'all grab one if y'all want. If y'all want to do it now, you want to do it later. If you want to cut out this, if you want to take that home or whatever. I only got 3 things of paint. They're only a couple bucks a piece, or like $1.50 a piece. So you're welcome to do them. I got stuff for if You just want to take one home and take a stencil. Or, you know, somebody can take this stencil. Or if you, you know, I don't know about spray gluing this on a t-shirt. You probably would never get the spray glue off, but they do. Some people use double stick tape and all. I tried to make it
as simple as possible,
of course.
That's all right.
The little stuff in the toes kind of looks like how much
it is.
And if you look at that shirt very close, it's pretty ugly. But far away, it's not too bad. So, yeah, I'll have the t-shirt and make you a PC little t-shirt. But I think that's all I had pretty much.
Well, that's really not too bad, but touching it too, it got good texture to it. You can really wash this. I mean, that's not, you can't pull that out. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. If you could stick it down, but like I said, the outside of the line.
I think you'll see us walking into a tattoo parlor. I designed this with
image
measures. So
Yeah, exactly. You can probably take rows of double stick tape all over this and tape it on the back of the stencil before you cut it out. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. You guys hear that?
What's that?
Mark was Tony was talking about stencil that was sticky, and I was thinking you could probably get double stick tape there before you even cut it out. Just put rows of double stick tape on there and then cut it out, and then it would make that stencil sticky, so you wouldn't have to stick it down to it.
On that stuff,
but that's the only way you, that would be the only way you get a good line.
She's doing like in the drawings and stuff, she did a lot of drawings, and she's not that. So they do those drawings and they have to fill up their stuff for size and everything, so she used some stuff.
Another thing is, like, as you can see, the letters that have a disconnected piece in the middle, I saved them out, but I knew it was going to look like crap anyway. But you could stick them in there if you wanted to. It suggests that on all the websites I've read.
Stick it in the hole.
Yeah, you can put some double stick tape on it and stick it back on there.
That's very cool.
That is cool.
I wanted to do t-shirts for us and just never did, so I figured. And I wanted to do t-shirts on my own. So
we got load shirts on. They're like, man, that's a game. That's a game, man.
You pulled over.
You know what I'm saying? They already get on those bikers anyway.
Isn't Helvetica a Windows mod?
It could be.
That's the European way they say it.
It's probably the correct way. I'm probably the idiot.
I think it came with Debian, though.
I did?
Huh?
Yeah, it is with Debian.
It may be like a common name or something. I don't know. But yeah, I've seen that in Windows before, too. But they wouldn't have, I don't think they would have packaged it, but I'm sure they wouldn't have been in
it. Restricted.
Woo! Yeah, they do got kicked to it.
Yeah, they do.
That'd be cool.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.